You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
That's it. I'm okay. starting with a slam. That's
Moonraker
right.
is better than really? Octopussy, all right? You said Octopussy earlier, and I was like, what?
Well, Moonraker has more of a gut punch, so yeah. You know, I figured.
Moonraker with a slam.
Yeah.
I'm going to come out swinging then.
Man, I'm ready to come out swinging on this one.
I don't know if anybody would necessarily perceive that as a slam, though. That might be kind of what people want.
Well, some people are definitely going to perceive that as a positive thing. It depends on whether or not you, like, saw Moonraker for the first time when you were an adult, or when you saw it for the first time when you were a kid, or the third to even and worse version, when you saw it when you were a kid and thought it was great, and then 20 years later watched it again and went,
ooh.
Oh God.
I watched it later and said, that holds up.
But did she have braces the second time you watched it?
She never did. She never did, Zach. That's a parallel universe. But I tell you, that bothers me because I believe it. I'm like, I can see that scene in my head. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion. We are talking about Kingsman, The Golden Circle, the follow-up to Matthew Vaughn's action spy comedy, The Kingsman, which was, I thought, the original one was really tremendously entertaining.
Yeah, I
liked it.
It was definitely a send-up of, I'd say more than anything, the Roger Moore era of James Bond films, but with a lot of very much more topical type humor to it, a lot more current humor, I should say, not topical.
Yeah. Had the first one had the advantage of kind of coming out of nowhere and being...
Surprising.
Being surprising because people weren't expecting... British Secret Service, well, I don't know.
And there were twists along the way, that stuff that happened in there, you're like, wow, did not see that coming.
I also think that using this guy, this relatively unknown lead actor we have here, especially in the first one, grounded it a bit more in reality. And
for Taron Egerton?
Yeah.
To come in? Yeah, because nobody knew who he was when this thing.
But I also think like the casting of just kind of the A story in the first film where it's like, you know, his mom's dating this like gangster guy. Like you really kind of felt like, oh, this guy's in some shit. And then, you know, when the story takes a turn later on.
Well, you're really rooting for him the whole way. And you're also watching him grow as a character. Like he's growing and learning and changing and earning things from that growth and change. And that makes you more drawn into the story.
Kind of, but in a sense, all those things you just described are an origin story.
Yes.
And like, that's what I felt like, the first movie suffered a little bit. Like I liked the first movie, but I don't love it.
Okay.
Okay.
And I think that maybe that's why it feels like an origin story. And this movie feels like the evolution of, like, I enjoyed this movie even more than the first.
Okay, well, we're definitely going to take different sides on this.
Interesting, yeah.
Because I looked at this movie, and the first thing I thought was, this is more in common with Men in Black 3 than it does with The Kingsman.
Dang, you are just slamming these.
Ouch.
But that's mainly because of a really... okay, so let's just get into it here.
Yeah.
All right, so like, if you haven't seen Kingsman, you're going to have to pull back. Because we're going to spoil some things that happened in towards the end of The Kingsman.
Yeah.
Sorry. Like, so if you... Go
the
watch
trailer,
it.
Like...
Well, the trailer gives away something that I'm like... And the fucking cast list on the posters give it away. You're like, come on, guys. It would have been a lot more pleasant if you had kept this under wraps. But... So now if you're like, oh, wait, no, I don't want to know. I haven't seen those things. So wait and go see the movie, I guess. Anyway, the idea is, so Taron Egerton's character of Eggsy is now, he's a full-on Kingsman secret agent. He has taken on the code of Galahad, which is what Colin Firth, his mentor from the first one, who is dead, was originally his name. But when he died... Eggsy becomes the new Galahad, and he's still working with Mark Strong as Merlin, who's kind of the tech support guy. Almost right off the bat, we see a couple things in his life that go along with that. I actually found the surprising thing is rather than go, well, they're going to go with the Roger Moore, there's a different chick in every film, they were like, oh, no, you remember the princess from the last movie that he, depending on which version of it you saw, he fucked in the ass? Well... she's his girlfriend now, and that's a whole thing, which was like, oh, really?
I loved that joke in the movie where she says, well, you know what happens if you save the world.
Yeah, which is, once again, like only half the audiences who saw the movie are even going to get that joke because they made two prints of it, one that did not have that the anal sex joke.
I don't remember that joke.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't see
the one. So you may not have seen that.
No, I never knew. I saw it on I rented it from Redbox. So
yes,
maybe,
then you saw the censored version.
Yeah, so I didn't, I was like.
Okay, can I spoil this joke for him then?
Yes, go ahead.
All right, so it gets to the end and he gets to save the girl and she says, he's like, I gotta save the world. And it's something along the lines of, if you save the world, you can do me in the ass. Yeah. Like, literally just point blank. And then it ends with, which you probably saw them hooking up. But, yeah.
But the
if you don't see the line.
He goes and.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they were doing.
Yeah. He taps that ass, literally. Yeah. Anyway, so they're together. They're a whole couple. And, you know, I mean, there's lots of cute, like, oh, that's so great. His life worked out like that. And then we're introduced to Julianne Moore, who is the Samuel Jackson of this film. She's playing Poppy Adams, who is a criminal mastermind and the biggest drug dealer in the world, who has her own organization called the Golden Circle that she runs out of, like, a ruin in Columbia that she's transformed into, like, a 50s downtown street for some reason.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I just like that, which is, like, okay, I guess.
It really, like, harkens to, like, the over-the-top Bond villain. Like, your Roger Moore argument is coming to the surface.
Well, no, I mean, that was, stuff like that was present in the first one as well with Samuel Jackson, to be sure. Like, that whole lisp thing was there because they were like, well, all the big Bond villains always have something physically wrong with them, like something's off, and that was his thing. He's got the lisp. But Julianne Moore, so she's crazy, so she's obsessed with the 50s. Like, she's her main base inside of it is like a 50s diner. Don't ask me why. But right off the bat, she's like, okay, well, before we enact our secret plan, we've got to take out the Kingsmen, which the movie's like, yeah, okay, so now everyone is dead, blown to pieces, including which I was very disappointed with.
It was a little much.
The female Kingsman character from the last one, who I really liked.
Well, spoilers.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like first 10 minutes of the movie. Yeah. Like, and, like, no one is alive anymore except for Merlin and Eggsy. So they're like, well, what are we going to do? They find out that they have a connection that's held deeply secret that goes back, presumably, hundreds of years to the American version of the Kingsmen, which are called the Statesmen. So they fly to Kentucky, where I was telling JC, it reminds me of the old Bill Hicks joke where he's like, you ever watch something about Austin that's from broadcast from somewhere else, like another state, and they're always like, meanwhile in Texas, it's like that, like this movie's a vision of Americans, we're all these fucking like tobacco chewing morons.
Cowboy hats.
Which was funny for a while, and after a while it's just like, I'm getting really fucking sick of country music and like cliches at this point. But anyway, so yeah, they go there, Jeff Bridges is playing, you know, almost every character Jeff Bridges plays in movies these days, he's playing old cowboy type stuff, but more of the East of Eden sort. Channing Tatum plays Tequila, Statesman secret agent. And sorry, ladies, he's only in this film for like maybe
I was surprised by that.
10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't kill him off, but they find an excuse to sideline him for almost the entire
movie.
Or
it's like, we got Channing Tatum for 2 days. Let's write him into the story.
And then there's Pedro Pascal, who you guys probably, you might know from Narcos, where he plays one of the main secret agents. He's great on there. He's Jack Daniels or whiskey. And I kept asking myself through this movie, because they kept insinuating, they kept doing the whole thing, well, clearly the Statesmen are bigger than the Kingsmen, you know, once again playing on this kind of Texas jokes. And you're like, really? So where the fuck are all the rest of your agents? You have, as near as I can tell, 3 people work for your company.
Yeah,
that's true.
including Halle Berry, who plays the equivalent of Mark Strong's character over there.
Ginger Ale.
So Julianne Moore's whole point, like, thing, and this is where the movie decides it's got to get political, is that she is, because she's this big drug supplier, she's poisoned all the drugs with this virus that makes you get all blue veiny, and then you go crazy, and then you get paralyzed, and she's blackmailing the president of the United States, played by Bruce Greenwood, or should I say an even redneck version of Donald Trump, essentially. To, like, you know, if you don't do this thing, I will kill everyone. And I get what they're going after, and I approve. Like, I'm like, I technically approve, but of what you're trying to say here. But yeah. I found it a little on the beating a nail in with a sledgehammer.
I appreciate the thought.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. But it was a little like, yes, I agree. I'm not sure that the Kingsman 2 was the right place for this type of very heavy-handed political statement.
Yeah, it definitely seemed after the fact. Like, you didn't need that, you know? You could have just... Like, I don't even think you really needed the president in there. You could have had her hold anybody ransom.
It's true. And yeah. Although I will say I did... Like, Elton John has been well-publicized, has a part in this movie. And at first it was like, come on. But he really grows on you and towards the end of his appearance here. He has a very funny sequence. I was like, okay.
Okay, so we're all on the same page that that was amazing.
I loved it. He's prominent throughout the movie. And it's like, I was laughing my ass off. Like, every time he popped on screen, he nailed it.
I'm laughing just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, this definitely tries to go for the bigger and crazier role for sequels. And I feel like you get any bigger and crazier than the Kingsman already was, you're kind of pushing it past the point where it starts becoming like not just parody of something else and not just fun, clever, tongue-in-cheek humor, but like more like Moonraker was to Man with a Golden Gun, where it's like, yeah, it's absurd, but you never go full Roger Moore.
Yeah. Well, and this kind of has sort of the weird thing that sequels sometimes do in that, because you mentioned the Statesman seem like they only have three people working for them. This kind of does the classic sequel thing of trying to create a bigger world. The whole movie is really only three, maybe four set pieces.
Yeah.
And so this had to have been made for a lot less money, although maybe more considering the cast.
No, that's what I was just looking for, because I was like, I was like, well, wait a minute. They sidelined Channing Tatum real fast. Yeah. It was one of their most expensive new gets, right? Yeah. So like, oh yeah, you go off to the side.
Oh, Jeff Bridges was probably an expensive
Jeff Bridges
get
is
too.
Barely in it too. Yeah. You know? You're like, most of the big people like that aren't actually in it that much. And a lot of the CG was shaky.
All of Vaughn's CG is shaky.
Yeah.
I think like in... He's never made a movie where you're like, oh, that looked realistic. It's all like, it's all cartoony.
Yeah.
And it feels cartoony to me.
I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, trying to do it cartoony. Yeah. But I thought this was like, when you expected this to be a step up, there were points where just the CG itself felt like it desperately needed two or three more passes, especially the stuff with Pedro Pascal and his electric whip thingy.
There was the scene where Channing Tatum was dancing and he was in that hallway. I'm like, he's not standing in that hallway.
Yeah. Everything feels green screened. But yeah. I felt the same about the first one. To me, everything felt green screened. And then same thing with X-Men. Like, I mean, I just think it's like the way he shoots CG, the way he creates a movie.
It wasn't so much the green screen aspect that bothered me. It's like things like when his whip would go back and grabbed a chair and then threw the chair at someone. It's just so completely clear that whip and chair.
It's very shiny.
Not terribly well. Like they hadn't put the final.
It's like
them.
There's a frame in between the CG and the actual chair that was sitting there.
Yeah.
And like where, you know, it's that old trick you cut right before the person punches. So then it looks like they hit them.
Yeah.
They do that, but you have CG, so you don't really need to. So you just get this really choppy and shaky footage.
He reminds me of Guy Ritchie sometimes. Like, well, you know, the way he,
you know, he used to produce for Guy Ritchie, right?
Yeah. I didn't know. Well, that makes sense.
Lockstock and
I thought they even went to school
Snatch
together. I'm not sure, though.
The way he shoots action sequences and the way he heavily relies on CG, that's
why. I'd buy that.
Yeah,
he does a lot of, like, camera tricks with his action scenes, which like really work well sometimes. There's one in here in particular towards the end that's like really fun to watch, the way he's got the camera moving around. It must have been a giant pain in the ass for the actors to film. Okay, stand like that for 10 minutes while we move this camera very slowly this way. Now you move very slowly that way. Although I'm sure a lot of it was like CG replacement. All right, so going into the thing that I know people are going to go like, yeah, I don't want to know. But like I said, it's on the posters. It's in the trailer. So if you really don't want to know, go away. or if you already know, stick around. Colin Firth does indeed return. I'm not going to say specifically how, except they already did it in this pretty much same trick in one of the Men in Black movies, and it didn't work when they did it there. I was like, oh, God, you're not really... Like, nobody liked it when you did it then. Why would you steal it
now
from an unsuccessful sequel?
Why you're comparing it to Men in Black.
Yeah,
okay.
Right? Am I wrong, though?
A little bit. It's a bit of a stretch, but... Well, I think whereas in Men in Black, it was really like the whole plot of the first two acts of that movie. In this, it's resolved quicker, you know? Like, they kind of get through all that. But, I mean, we're going to go too much into the plot of this film.
It's a sizable part, nonetheless.
It sticks around. I mean, there are, like, two or three try-fails.
Yeah, and there's still
of him trying to bring
and there's still
back.
The after effects of it that's a plot device. It's almost the fact that he's not perfect as a MacGuffin in the film in and of itself. You know?
Yeah.
like, okay.
I can't argue with that, to be honest.
I look past... Yeah, you're right, but I was just enjoying everything else so much that I guess I look past it.
And this movie is bright and colorful and super fast moving and way plays too much John Denver music in it. Shit, there's a lot of John Denver music in this movie. And I'm like, you couldn't throw some Hank Williams into the mix or something? I'm just saying. Johnny Cash. I get they like country music. I guarantee you people in Kentucky are not sitting around going,
I think
John Denver, play it again. Play it again.
I think this year John Denver kidnapped like rich producers' kids and was like, I'm not giving your kid back until you give me some royalty.
I was aware of it already being in three films before this. Just the song Country Road.
Yeah.
Like, it was in... The last Channing Tatum movie, Logan Lucky, was in as well. But I was talking to a guy outside the theater. He's like, no, this is the sixth film this year to feature that song. I was like,
wow.
Did the rights just drop in price to John Denver's library or something? I don't know. It's not like he just died. That was a long time ago. Anyway.
Spoiler alert if you didn't know
John Denver was there. Feel free to post an old article as if it was new and watch everyone laugh at you.
Well, what I feel like this film misses that the first one got correct for me is that the first one was really grounded in reality at the start of that film. You felt like this real sense of danger, and then it made you like really feel as he accomplished more and like grew as a character. You know, you had like that... It was based in reality, and then this one just kind of starts off. You're already on the mothership.
Yeah.
And we've taken off.
And the character really doesn't... Like I said, in the first one, you're really watching him grow and change as a character. You're on a voyage with him. In this one, he's already kind of at a level, and that doesn't really change. They try to throw in that storyline of like, oh, well, he's fighting with his girlfriend about something that I thought started as kind of a clever bit. Like, what if you were a spy, and you were like, fuck, I got to sleep with somebody else. But you're in a serious relationship, and this is why spies don't get in serious relationships, but what would you do? But the whole thing kind of just felt really, like, forced, crowbarred in there so he would have some sort of personal story, to me.
Yeah, that's definitely lacking in this one, and I guess it's sort of the point of origin stories is to, like, build a character and have him go from A to B. This whole movie is just kind of...
Well, now he's already 007.
Yeah.
So, how does what's 007's arc in any given 007?
Well, how many Skyfalls are there?
I'm not saying necessarily it's their responsibility, but I'm saying it's a better movie almost every time when you can do a sequel, when the character has a way that they do grow beyond, they do have something new that changes them distinctively, you know?
Because it'd be one thing if even the bringing back his mentor sort of like if he like learned something in this movie to make him an even better. That didn't really happen in this movie either.
Yeah. Like, I will say as well, there were a lot of unpredictable things in the first one where I was just, wow, I did not see that coming. And I can't think of anything in here that I was like, that took me off guard. Almost every turn of the plot, I'm like, yeah, I saw that coming from like 1,000 miles away.
What about that Channing Tatum scene at the very end of the movie? You weren't surprised by that?
But that was just an one-off joke. That wasn't really... And yeah, kind of not surprised by that either. Although, did anybody stick around post-credits? Because I left right when the credits started. Was there anything after the credits at all?
I didn't.
I don't think so, but
you know what,
I didn't stick around.
You know, one of the things they kept saying is like, hey, you guys can't both be Sir Galahad, and they never fixed that.
Oh.
They never came up with anything. I was like, oh, I wonder if there was an end credits
sequel
scene.
To the sequel!
It's like, I presume he's going to become, because everybody else is dead, that the old, like... he'd become the new head of the Kingsmen.
And, yeah. And I know one of the big problems, even Martin was saying, like, if you don't have a good idea, what don't bother making the movie. I think I do have a good idea for the third one.
All right. Well, let's do the final thoughts, okay. And then we'll finish up with your idea, and then okay. we'll weigh in. So why don't we start with final thoughts? And JC, why don't you take it?
I mean, this is a middle of the road movie. It's the type of movie I do have a lot of fun with, and you guys have heard me say that I place a lot of value in the things that I can rewatch over and over again. And like, yeah, a couple of years down the road, I can totally see an afternoon in which I'm going to want to watch these first two movies just because I've got a few hours to kill. So I place a lot of value in that. In that, I didn't put a lot of pressure on this movie to be good. I know sometimes it's sort of an unfair cop out, but I mean that's sort of where I placed this movie, and it met those expectations. A lot of fun. The action's really good. If you like the first one, yeah, there's no real reason why you wouldn't dislike this one. I can see you maybe being disappointed and wanting a better movie, but yeah, I think this will fulfill most people's expectations, if not exceed them a little bit. I'd give it 7 out of 10 cute pugs.
Nice.
Kyle? I really enjoyed this. I think the more we kind of take it apart, the more I'm like, oh, the Emperor, he might not wear many clothes. But when you're in it, when you're watching it, the action, it hits just as hard as that first film. The characters are just as fun. You know, somebody that we haven't mentioned that I really enjoyed in the first film and in this one is that guy who kind of the preppy guy from the first film.
Yeah, Charlie, the villain, played by Edward Holcroft.
I just really enjoy kind of the dynamic between the two of them. I don't know. I feel like it's a tired trope, but with them, it doesn't really seem like they seem to have this personal relationship, and I get the motivations between the two of them. Mm-hmm. So when it's just them on screen, whether it's a fight or whether they're like having a back and forth, I kind of get the idea that like sometimes Eggsy's the bad guy and this guy's being victimized by him, and then vice versa. Like they're kind of each other's enemy. I felt like they were very well matched, and I was kind of bummed to see what they do with that character at the end of the film.
Okay.
But I enjoyed this a lot. I think if you're a fan of the first one, you're definitely going to want to see this. I know I'm going to see it a second time. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 tracking devices.
Zach.
All right. Well, I liked the first one, and so I didn't have, like, amazing expectations. I just said, I'm going to go see a movie, and I'll probably like it. And I ended up really liking this movie. I thought the set pieces were bigger than the first one. Overall, the movie was way funnier than the first one. Like, I was laughing constantly throughout this movie. The Elton John scenes are, like, I don't know. That's some of the hardest I've laughed, like, all year, like, in a movie. Because, I don't know, Elton John is just so charming. And, I'm going to give it 8 guns out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, I guess for me it was just that point. And there's a lot of films I can think of this way, a lot of sequels, where I'm like, yeah, this is okay, you know? And at first, I'm very confident. And I admit, the action scenes are the strongest things they got here. When it actually gets into straight-up fisticuffs, like, it opens, it's not even a minute before this movie goes into a giant action sequence. And it's a really cool one. And Vaughn knows how to film that stuff. It is neat. But it does occasionally suffer, like I said, with all the bells and whistles sometimes, that, ooh, looks a little eeky with the CG, could have used another pass or two. And, like, that's for me. I didn't laugh out loud once. I just chuckled. I chuckled a lot. I was like, huh. Went, ha. Huh. That guy's like, I'm laughing in here, right here. I'm laughing hysterically right here. It was just, for me, just kind of there. And I agree with Martin. It's like, if you didn't have a good idea, why didn't you wait till you had one to make it? And, you know, I mean, like, I get the idea you got to strike while the iron is hot too. And maybe the next one will be the one that for me will really hit it out of the park. This one was just a little too broad for my tastes. It was too much of a good thing, as it were. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 little belt buckle flasks of whiskey, because I kind of got to get one of those belts now.
Those are pretty cool.
Those are pretty cool. JC, you had the idea. Now, obviously, he's going to have to say stuff that might be spoilers for this one. So,
well, not really. We talked about it a little bit. Eggsy really likes anal sex.
Uh-huh. And
so the third movie is going to be him turning on the Kingsmen and trying to end the world, and then he's going to end up saving the world just so he can keep having butt sex with us.
Wait, why would he turn? I'm unclear about what him having to liking anal sex has to do with him.
Because every time he saves the world, he gets to.
Oh, I see. So his excuse to get anal sex again is because there's God that would not put the world in danger.
Yeah,
he's gonna have a fake villain that ends up just being a robot. Yeah,
that's apparently the only way she lets him back there.
Okay. So. Okay, that's a valid possibility. Yeah.
And I'm also, as a side note, just kind of wondering when the first movies or when movies are going to start portraying a joke President Trump.
What, just flat out project? Just, well, the New American Horror Story starts on the night of the election. Nice. I don't know if there's a actor playing Trump or not, but and I don't know if you count Alec Baldwin. You know?
Yeah.
Dude actually won an Emmy for doing that. Even he was like, really?
Oh, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners to oneofus.net, be a subscriber. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, being a subscriber is it. The long-term benefits of being a subscriber at oneofus.net have been proven by scientists. Whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Watch TV, but not too much. Remember to cast a wide net of types of shows you watch. Even reality TV may have the occasional gem to offer. Don't feel too bad that you have trouble finding friends that share your interests. You are amazing, and you should love what you love. Sure, in 20 years, you'll look back at your favorite stuff and cringe at some of it, but it will be with an affectionate smile. By the way, I have no doubt that you probably look amazing. Even if you haven't found that person yet, if you believe in yourself, somebody is going to love you. I'm sure anime is great. I don't personally watch a lot of it, although some of our staff certainly does. You'll feel better in realizing that my lack of interest in it isn't me critiquing the quality of anime and affects your love of it in no way. Tony is probably not gonna show up. Yeah, we wish he would too. Love that guy. Taking it personal when someone likes something you hate or hates something you love in entertainment is understandable when young. But as you get older, trust me, there will be little that will make you feel more embarrassed about yourself than cruel things you said on someone's Facebook page about DC versus Marvel or whatever at 3 in the morning. At least hopefully. Write. Create. Do your own thing. And if you don't have the time, find the time. Try out the shows you haven't given a shot to yet on our network, like Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, Somebody Likes It, or Deliberations of Doom. We think you'll be pleasantly surprised. But seriously, trust me on the subscription.